Hello and welcome everybody. I hope you can hear me. I'm using a microphone, so I may have clicked the wrong box. Let me know if you can't hear me. Welcome to Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast. Today we are talking to the most excellent coach and physio, Tim Piggott from HP3 Coaching. Woohoo! Hi Tim.
Hiya.
We're going to be talking about today what to do in the last couple of weeks before an ultra, because me and Tim have both got the Ultra Trail Snowdonia coming up on the 13th of May, which is 2 weeks away-ish, 10 days, and I'm doing the 50k. No, yeah, it's not even that now. I'm doing the 50k, and Tim is doing the 100k, and you've got a few clients as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got quite a bit of team going, it's going to be good.
Yeah, so it's going to be really cool. We'll be covering training, tapering, fueling, injuries, packing your kit and your fuel and your mandatory kit as well. So yeah, how are you personally doing pre-race, Tim?
Yeah, I think I'm all good. I've recce'd the entire course, so I know every bit of it, which is always useful. And if anybody is doing these races and you haven't been able to get there to recce, I have actually created a few 3D fly-throughs, so they're on my YouTube channel. There's nothing fancy about them. I just did them using the OS mapping for my athletes that are racing. But it's useful. You know, last night I was on the treadmill and just watching the fly-through, and you literally just visualize every twist and turn, so you know exactly what's coming up.
It's so useful. I've literally just been watching that myself. So yeah, thank you so much for that. And I'll put a link to those in the podcast show notes or the film description below. So
yeah, no worries. I mean, like I said, they're nothing fancy. I haven't sort of edited them in any clever way. They are quite simply the raw 3D fly-throughs, but it just, again, helps you visualize the course.
Yeah.
Training's gone reasonably well. You know, again, we're getting a lot of the messages. You know, some of your patrons have sent messages in about that sort of final prep and have I done enough training? And I know you were asking exactly the same question to me. You know, have I done enough training for this? And the short answer is you can never do enough. And it's far better that you stand on that start line rested, healthy, fit, then you try and cram the last little bit in, or you try and do an extra run and you end up being sore, injured, sick, whatever it's going to be. So it's normal to be feeling nervous at this stage. It's normal to be maybe starting to question, have I done it? But it's important to then at this moment kind of reflect back on the last, you know, 3-6 months or so and just say, well, what have I done? What has gone well? And really kind of pick out some of those key training sessions that have gone really well and give yourself that confidence boost that, you know, you can do this. So, you know, like yourself, you did a marathon. Was it last weekend?
Yeah. Not just recently, but the one before that. Yeah.
The weekend before that. Yeah. So, you know, you can just reflect back on that and go, well, you know, I've just done a marathon. I've done, you know, 42K. Now, I know that was a flat marathon, but it's still time on feet, isn't it? And you could argue that actually a flat marathon is going to be probably harder in some respects than Snowdonia. You know, Snowdonia is going to be mostly hiking. There's not a lot of running. And in 50K, there's really not a lot of running. You know, you've got the section from Penny Pass down to the next checkpoint. I'm not going to butcher the Welsh, the farm, where you've got a nice track you can run down. But apart from that, that's hiking.
Just hiking.
Yeah. So
it's a lot of hiking. Well, that's good. I'm taking my poles. There's been big debate on the Facebook group about poles. But I don't know if anybody else gets like this, but my training has definitely not gone to plan in terms of actual physical exercise, having the flu. So I've done 18 miles of the Manx Mountain Marathon, followed by a few days later, 13 miles of it. So they were good, like whole days out on the hill, with lots of ascent, which was really great. Then I came back and I had a bit of a rest, and then I did a flat marathon, which I was really pleased with. And then since then, I haven't really gone out and done like any runs because I was recovering from that. I've done a lot of biking, not hardcore, just like taking Finley to nursery and to Burley and stuff, like 6 miles, 5 miles. And I've done a couple of strength classes. And I'm planning to just go out with all my kit for the race on either Thursday or Friday this week and just hike up some hills, like not anything super intense, but just go to like Leicester, there's Bradgate Park there, and just hike up this 120 meter hill, just maybe like a few times, nothing like, not sprinting down it or like not like beasting myself, but just to sort of get my head in that sort of mind frame and just test what choices I've made for my kit, maybe take a couple of extra different bits with me and see, just see if my final choices are okay.
Yeah, that's it. You know, there's we had a quick chat just before we went on air about the kit list, and obviously for a mountain event like this, there is a fairly substantial kit list, and you need to make sure that you've got the right kit. So, you know, we've still got enough time to go shopping if you need to. So, you know, at this stage, it's worth getting all your kit out, laying it out, making sure everything's still good. You know, you haven't forgotten that you've got a tear in your waterproof trousers or something like that. Making sure that, you know, your head torches are working, you don't need to replace batteries or anything like that. You know, download the GPX files and make sure that all uploads. But yeah, pack your kit and make sure that in your race vest that you're happy with where things need to go, so that when you're in the race, you know exactly which pocket X, Y, or Z item is. You talked about using poles. So, you know, if you haven't been using poles a lot recently in training, then you've got to make sure that you're putting a few runs in now to make sure that you're drilled in terms of how to get your poles out, how to put your poles away nice and quickly, so that you're not wasting time faffing trying to get your poles out and then faffing trying to put them away again. So just, you know, if you're going to go and do some hill reps, that's an ideal opportunity, because you're going to be taking your poles out and putting them away again, you know, it might be half a dozen times or more. So really just drill that technique, so that you just don't have to stop and faff with anything. We've talked about this before, haven't we? The sort of aid stations and other things within ultramarathons. And you can save a lot of time, or you can lose a lot of time, if you're not drilled with those kind of techniques.
Yeah, definitely. On my marathon the other weekend, I actually overtook a friend because she went to the loo and stopped at a checkpoint, and I just overtook her at that point. She caught me up, but I felt pretty good for a good few miles. I was like, yes, Tim would be proud of me.
Be on the go, don't stop. Just
yeah. And if your training hasn't quite gone to plan, like mine hasn't, definitely not gone to plan, I am tempted to like cram in a bit of training last minute. Is that a definite no-no? You literally cannot make any increase in fitness in the last 1 to 2 weeks before the race, am I right?
Not at all. So there's no point trying to put that extra run in. You know, all you're going to do is create fatigue, so that you end up standing on that start line more tired than you could have been. You're not going to make yourself any fitter. In terms of, you know, could you boost your confidence by going to do a bigger run? All right, maybe you could boost your confidence, but then all that's going to happen is you're going to turn up on the race more tired, fatigued, sore than you could have been otherwise. So, you know, if you've missed training, you've missed training, it's gone. There's nothing you can do to change that.
Yeah.
I'll get yourself fitter for the race day. All you can do is get yourself in a really good place for that start line.
Yeah.
So just follow the normal plan.
So I can go and do those hill reps just out of confidence and like where my stuff is and like wearing all the kit, but it won't be like a training session. It'll be a confidence boosting, just a practice session.
But, you know, you don't need to be doing more than, I mean, this weekend, you know, I wouldn't be doing more than 2 hours.
Yeah.
If you think about, you know, what your flat marathon was, you know, that gave you good time on feet.
Yeah, had three good times on feet, definitely. Exactly. So I'm pleased with that.
Exactly. And again, you know, the Manx Marathon, you know, in the mountains there, you had good time on feet. And that's what's more important. Yeah. So you've done that. You don't need to go and do extra distance. So again, it's very common that people are in these kind of final couple of weeks. It's the weekend before. You think, oh, I'll just squeeze in one more long run. All it's going to do is leave you tired. So leave it. Believe in what you've done in the previous 3 months. Look back and see the bigger runs that you have done, and they will be there.
Yeah.
So believe in yourself and trust in yourself there.
Yeah, and just say to yourself, it's a hike, it's not a run. Like, that really helps psychologically for me to make it seem more doable.
Yeah.
Not even hiking. I do have a question from one of my patrons, Conleth, about tapering, because he says that he wants to know your suggestions for tapering without losing the intensity of the training, because he says he doesn't really taper, because the last few times that he has, it's made him really lethargic on race day and even disinterested in running, he says. He says it's really weird, but if he only takes 1 or 2 days off in the week before, he feels much better. And for your information, he's a back of the pack runner. So what would you say about that then?
Yeah, so tapering is somewhat of a personal thing. You need to experiment and see what works for you. So with the kind of endurance and the longer endurance stuff that we're doing here, we don't need a massive taper. The kind of the science behind tapering is kind of largely born out of the 70s and trying to flush out drugs from your system.
Really?
Kind of 3-week taper was more about flushing drugs out your system before the testers came around on race day. And also it was born out of a lot of the kind of very short sprint events, where actually, you know, for example, in the pool, people were still putting huge amounts of volume in, so needed to recover from that vast amount of volume in order to then perform sprinting laps. So our knowledge of tapering, that kind of traditional 3-week taper, pretty much out the window. So, I mean, we're less than 2 weeks away from Snowdonia, but if I kind of step back a little bit, generally what I would be looking at is, you know, your last big block of training is around about 3 weeks out. So your last big long run is 3 weeks out, because it takes 3 weeks to kind of absorb and realize that fitness, so that will then feed.
So I've accidentally done that then with doing that marathon. Well done me.
it's all good. And then what you want to be doing is sort of scrubbing that fatigue, so having a really easy week after that last session 3 weeks out.
I'm doing so well
So you kind of recover, you get really fresh, and then you start to lift it back up again. So this week, for example, I'm doing a little bit more, and I'm going to end up doing more training this week than I did last week. And then, yes, then you're just looking at anything between maybe a 6 and 10 day, just slowly tapering it back down again. So you maybe your last really high intensity, so I was doing hill reps and then a double session with a tread hill, so running uphill on the treadmill yesterday. So sort of 10 days out, really hard intensity sessions, and then it'll just start to taper down from there. And then, yeah, the week before the race, you might just need to take, you know, 1 or 2 extra easy days, but keep it ticking over. And of course, what you can do is maintain that intensity. So you might want to still keep some strides in there. You might still want to put some, you know, 2-3 minute efforts in there just to keep the engine firing. Have some cruise intervals or sort of upper aerobic intervals. So that might be kind of 8 or 10 minute, just a little bit of faster or some steadier hill efforts. But the volume comes right down. So that's where you get your recovery from. Because, yes, if you just stop completely or really taper it right down, then, yeah, your body just goes into rest and recovery mode, and things will feel sluggish, your legs will feel heavy. So yeah, absolutely. You know, if you found that you just need a few days of easy the week before, brilliant. That obviously works for you.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I hope that answers your question, Conleth. I think that you seem to have found your magic way of tapering, so that sounds really good, backed up by Tim's advice there. Tim, you sent me something really interesting, which ties in with Arlene's question here about injury just prior, because one good thing about, like, but personally from not doing a ton of training is that I feel very uninjured, which is a good thing. So I feel really uninjured. I did a strength class today and I did my physio exercises as well today. And I'm planning to just keep doing those every day this week, just a little bit of physio exercises. But if you do have an injury, like Arlene's saying here, she says, how do you know when an injury is bad enough that you should not go to the race in the first place? Is it just pre-race jitters? And also she's asking about how to relax in the days before, especially if you don't sleep well. So yeah, two sides there. Let's tackle when is an injury bad enough? And I suppose here it's like my flu as well. Like when do you know if the flu, you know, an illness as well as injury is bad enough so that you, I probably shouldn't have been on that start line for the Manx Mountain Marathon, but I wanted to make a film and it was a really nice day, so I just thought, well, I'll go and see what I can do and at least it'll be a nice training run. So yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that, but it felt good to get out.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? You know, you put a lot of time and effort and energy into turning up to a race, and sometimes you do, you know, you get sick in the build-up to it. You know, I've done that before, you know, travelled all the way over to Europe for a race, and you know, you pick up a cold in the days beforehand, and you know if you were back home you shouldn't really be starting that race, but you try anyway, and 9 times out of 10 it goes wrong and you finish. So I think I suppose we have two different questions there. I think sort of the sickness one, you do need to respect that a little bit more, and I think everyone's awareness following sort of COVID and the impact of carrying a virus and exercising there and the risks involved with that, I think we're far more savvy about that now than people maybe were a bit too blasé before, thinking, oh, it's only a cold, oh, it's only the flu, and you can push on. Whereas actually, you know, if you push really hard when you are sick, you can do yourself some serious damage, and you know, particularly sort of cardiac problems. Or go into, you know, post-viral fatigue, which again is what we're seeing with people with COVID and going into those sort of long COVID situations. So, you know, you do need to be very careful when it comes to if you are sick. Again, there's the idea about, you know, if it's above the neck, you can probably carry on. If it's below the neck, if it's on your chest, then you need to leave it. And yeah, so sometimes, you know, if you are sick in the build-up to a race, you've got to take the sensible decision and not start. The race will always be there, the mountains will always be there, you can come back next year, as disappointing as that is. Yeah. And maybe just got to pivot and find another event in a few weeks' time. In terms of niggles and injuries, it is very common that in this phase we start getting those little aches, those little pains, those little niggles. Some of that is just because your body is in that kind of rest and recovery mode, because the training's dropped down. Suddenly there is this time and energy that your body's got to start to deal with some of these little niggles. So you will sort of feel things a bit more. Obviously you might be getting a bit more anxious and you're kind of questioning and asking your body, how am I feeling? Is this a niggle? Is it not? So you're kind of looking for things and therefore will notice it. So it's very, very common that we feel these niggles. Are they a full-on injury though? And that's the difficult thing to answer. Obviously, if in doubt, then you need to try and see a medical professional of some description, whether it's going to see your physio or sports doc or other therapist, and get some more objective information rather than you just trying to assess yourself. I sent you a sort of an image of the sort of traffic light system that we use in sort of physio, particularly, of, you know, if you're feeling a little bit of pain, is that a bad thing? When do you need to stop? And that was particularly the question from, who was it? Arlene, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when is a pain enough that you need to stop completely, or when can you just maybe carry on with a little bit of caution? And generally speaking, we use that sort of pain scale, that sort of 0 to 10, 10 being really bad pain, 0 being to nothing at all. And where do you kind of score that? So if you're saying, you know, my pain is, you know, less than 4 out of 10. So, you know, there's something there, but it's not really bad. It's not affecting the way I'm moving. I can still run. I can still do everything. But there's just something there. Then you're probably okay to continue. If that pain is kind of 4, 5, 6 out of 10, then, and maybe it's starting to affect the way you're training. Maybe you can't run as much. You've had to reduce your volume down. Maybe you're moving differently, you're trying to change your technique or you're guarding, then that's indicating that, you know, you can maybe carry on training, but racing's probably not a sensible thing to do. And obviously if it's more than that and it's, you know, preventing you training, then that kind of answers the question that standing on the start line of a race really is not a sensible idea. So that's, I would be saying that sort of 4 out of 10 is your threshold. If it's more than that, then starting that race is probably not a sensible thing to do. If it's less than that, then you're probably okay. But you also need to consider what the rest of your season is looking like. You know, is this the pinnacle of your season that you've been working towards? And how much are you willing to gamble? You know, if it is that low paying and you think, well, hold on, I can probably start this and, you know, it hasn't been getting worse in training, so maybe I can start and hopefully finish. But if this is not the pinnacle of your season, or you've got other things coming up later on that you can just go, right, let's just pivot my focus and I'll concentrate on ones in, you know, 6 weeks' time, couple of months' time, then maybe that is the more sensible thing to do.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I hope that answers your question, Arlene. There was a little bit on how to relax before a race as well, but just before we get onto that, I've got a question from Tadej, who's just on the live chat, and he says, how long after you feel better from an illness is it okay to start training again? Because I think he may have had a cold or something, a flu or something. He says he's feeling good today and thinking of doing a short run tomorrow. That sounds pretty sensible, doesn't it? Like, just test the water.
Yeah, so it depends on what type of illness, of course. A good rule of thumb is when an athlete says they're ready to return to training, make them wait one more day. So if they're saying that they feel better today and planning on going for a run tomorrow, that sounds fairly sensible. Again, you know, if it has been a bad virus and you've been ill for maybe a week or so, then you're probably looking at a good 5-10 days recovery. So you might be looking at another few days if you've been out of action for a few days. So that probably fits in there.
Yeah.
It depends on the severity. You know,
yeah.
If you've missed just maybe a couple of days of training, you know, just like say missed maybe two or three days of training, you can then, once you feel better, probably wait one more day and then you can ease back into training. Just drop the planned sessions down by sort of 50-60% initially and then build back into there. If you've been out of action for more than a week, then you're going to need basically the same amount of time to then ease back into training. So just think about whatever don't just try and jump straight back into what your training plan would have been. Think about, right, let's just reduce that down. If you've been out of action for a week, it might be just dropping it down to, you know, 50-75% and then slowly back up again. If you've been out of action for 2 weeks, you might be needing dropping it down to maybe even less than 50% and then taking a good week to 2 weeks to slowly build back up again.
Yeah, when I had my cold, I was kind of like teetering on the brink for a while, and I had a really bad cough and I was just getting annoyed, so I just trained anyway. And in hindsight, that was probably a terrible thing to do, because after my 16 miler, I just got like a terrible flu then.
Yeah.
Like aches and pains, full, like in bed for 3 days, that kind of thing. And it was just really, really bad. And I was out for 2 weeks, and then I didn't run for 2 weeks. Once I was better, I was sort of better, and then I was like, right, I'm not going to push it. And then I just did the Manx Mountain Marathon, 18 miles of it. But I feel like I was fully better by then, but it was just a bit of a shock to the system.
Absolutely.
So, and I just went slowly and just was a slow coach. But I could definitely feel it, that I could feel the lack of training. I didn't feel ill anymore. Then when I got back after the marathon, I did a 6 mile walk on the Tuesday after my marathon, and I felt like I was going to get a cold again that evening, and that next day I felt like I was going to get a cold. So I think I went out and did like a 4 mile walk the next day, and then by the Thursday I was feeling like I was going to come get a cold again. So I just thought, right, no, back off now, rest. So yeah. I feel like now I've got a bit more of a sense of how to gauge it in my body, because I never really understood listen to your body in the past. I've just always just gone and done whatever, but now I feel like I'm getting that concept of listening to your body and backing off.
That's it. You know, you've got to remember, you know, your immune system has obviously taken a massive hit, and you've got to let it recharge. But the other thing to sort of bear in mind in terms of coming back into training is, you know, that's a key time for when people get injured, because it's not that you're, you know, a lot of injuries, people think, oh, it's an overuse problem. You know, I've done too much training and that's why I've picked up an injury. Whereas quite commonly actually is under training, in the sense that maybe you've had a break, you know, as you said there, you know, you missed a few weeks because you were sick and then needed that time to recover. So you've actually had a massive deload So you've lost a load of fitness, which is why you can't then just jump straight back in at the same level of training you were doing previously. You've got to back it off again and then slowly build back up.
Yeah, it takes ages, doesn't it? I just felt like I had a cold every week. Like for 1 week of every month in this year, I've been out with a cold, and it's really frustrating. But you can't really do anything about it apart from ease off. And if you try and go full pelt, then you're just going to make it worse. That's what I've discovered this year.
Absolutely. And as you're going to find, you know, young children are just a breeding viruses, and you'll just bounce from one to the other for the next few years at least.
Yep. Lovely. I don't know how people do it, because I see like Katie Carr Saberstein out doing all her stuff, and Sophie Power, she's absolutely incredible. She's got three kids now, and you know, she did the UTMB when her second kid was like breastfeeding still, and I just don't know how she wasn't just completely tired and ill. Like,
well, you know, these folk, you know, Jasmine's another example, isn't she? They're just superhumans.
Yeah, but then actually talking to Jasmine just recently about her Barclay, she did go through a period of fatigue in the autumn and winter this year, and she had an injury as well. Well, she had the ACL, which is like a reoccurring injury for her, but she isn't invincible, but she gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning, so no wonder she needed a bit more of a nap. It's incredible. Okay, so we've covered the injury side of things. So we've covered the training and how you sort of taper off for that, and we've covered the injury side of things. So now that all that's really left apart from that is to just talk about what you're going to take with you, like your packing. Actually, Arlene did have a question, didn't she, about sleeping just prior? She said, how do you relax in the day before, especially if you can't sleep? So we'll just do that before we talk about the kit side of things.
Yeah, okay. So there's lots of strategies you can be using to help you relax. This question of, you know, why you're not sleeping, are you going over in your head all the different things to do with the race? And what you want to be doing for that is lists are my sort of go-to there. You know, get everything written down. If it's written down and you ticked it off, you know you've done it. And if you wake up in the night and, oh, I need to remember to do this, well, write it down. And then you're not going to forget, and you can try and sort of go back to sleep again. Use other relaxation strategies, you know, whether it's meditation, mindfulness. You know, there's loads of apps out there, you know, Headspace or Calm are sort of two quite common ones. There's loads of stuff out there, obviously on YouTube or things like that. You know, try and do some of that, just that relaxation, that mindfulness, that meditation. Just go and have a walk. You know, sometimes it's just this nervous energy that's building up. Or just get out and just go for a walk, just a nice, easy walk. But that again will help calm things down. Just 20-30 minutes is enough just to, you know, just calm that down. In terms of, you know, getting worried in those last few days, or, you know, the night before, you know, classically people don't really sleep particularly well the night before. I mean, for my race it starts at 5 a.m. so, you know, my alarm's going to be going off at 3 a.m. am I going to get my sleep? Probably not. So you can try and bank sleep in the period leading up to it. And that has been shown to work, actually, that, you know, just go to bed a couple of hours earlier than you would normally do in those last, you know, maybe sort of 4 or 5 days building up to the event. And even if you're just lying there, but even if you're not sleeping, you're lying there, you're resting, and that is boosting your recovery. And you know, despite what people say, you can bank sleep a little bit, and that will actually then improve your performance if you wait for the sleep deprivation period coming up. So, you know, hopefully for the 50K, you're not going to be running out of sleep. Certainly, you know, people doing the 100K and, you know, those who are doing 100 milers, you know, you're going to be going through, you know, at least one night. You know, for some of the 100 milers, you're going through two nights of no sleep. So trying to bank as much rest and sleep in that preceding week is really, really important. But the more you worry about the fact you're not sleeping, the harder it is to sleep. So the best advice there is just not worry about actually sleeping. Mm-hmm. And the chances are you're actually sleeping more than you realize. So just chill, relax, read a book, listen to some relaxing music, and you are going to be recharging. So yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter that night. I always think it doesn't matter the night before you race. If even if you have zero sleep, it doesn't matter. You can get through one night, and unless you've got like a 100 mile away, you're going to be then another two nights of sleep. That might be a bit more of a problem. But like, I didn't sleep very well before my marathon. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to tell her this, but my friend that I was sleeping in the same room as, she kind of very gently snored like the whole night, and I couldn't get to sleep. And then I probably got a few hours, obviously, but I had a really terrible night's sleep. But I knew that it didn't matter, because I've done these really long walks since I was a kid, and I never used to sleep well in that school hall that we used to just sleep in a village hall on a sleeping mat. And you know, when there was carry mats that were just these foam things, it was always really uncomfortable. Mr. Skirmer was always snoring away, and it was just really uncomfortable, and I knew that I can do long distance after a very bad sleep, so don't worry everybody.
Earplugs.
Yeah, I did put my earplugs in, but they really hurt. I think I need to get some smaller ones. I think I've got small ears. They just really, really hurt, and it's worse than the noise. We just do have a comment from Hannah that's just come in on the Facebook page, and she said she's just this comment, really. She says it's the last week of her taper. She's just done the Pennine Barrier 270k. She was she was first lady there with her pair, and she said she ended up having a niggle before the last week, before she did the race, so she ended up resting, and she felt really rubbish about it, but then the niggle didn't impact her race, so she said that was really good. Trail Running Phil says on the live chat, great to hear mindful running tips like this. And Andrew is here as well, and he is popping in because he is doing the UTS 50k, the same as me, on the 13th. So he's going to be watching the full video later. So yeah, I hope that's helpful for you, Andrew. And we'll put those fly throughs up as well. I've just got the link for the 50k fly through, so I'll put all those up later. But yeah, let's now talk about just the last stuff that you do, fueling. Fueling before and then packing. So Jade says, perfect timing. My longest race to date, the North Sounds Way 50 mile, is in 2.5 weeks. If I could ask anything, it would be, what tips does Tim have for fueling in the days leading up to race day? Is it best to carb load, for example? And if so, how many days before? You've probably answered this question tons in your time.
I think I did see that message somewhere in the chat. In terms of sort of carb loading, I wouldn't be trying to push the amount of carbs. Basically, you're going to be reducing your training down, just carry on eating normally. So therefore, there will be more energy available, because if you just keep eating normally, if you're not training as much, there's more energy for you to then store. I mean, there are carb loading protocols you can use. However, if you get it wrong, you're going to end up with gastrointestinal distress. So unless it's something you practiced and you know works well for you, I wouldn't worry about trying to push loads of extra carbs in there. You know, all that's going to happen is you're going to feel bloated. As you take on more carbohydrate, you take on more water, so you're going to feel heavier, sluggish, your legs are going to feel heavy. Your belly might not be feeling brilliant. So don't be sort of pushing those extra carbs. You know, the old school, just, you know, massive carbohydrate, your massive pasta parties the day before a race, you're more likely to upset yourself than have boundless energy on race day. Just eat normally. It's as simple as that. I mean, there are some strategies where, you know, you can look to increase the percentages of your carbohydrate and do some short high intensity efforts in the days leading up to the race, and then along with those very short, you know, might be literally a 3 minute max effort, and then you make sure you take more carbohydrate around that. That can push extra glycogen into your muscles, so that can be useful, but it's going to be more useful for those sort of short intensity efforts. Obviously, what we're talking about here, you know, North Downs 50, was it? North Downs Way 50. Or like we're doing here with, you know, Ultra Trail Snowdonia, these are long events. So it's more about just letting your body rest and recover, eating normally. That's going to give you sufficient energy come race day. I wouldn't be trying to smash extra carbs in the days beforehand. It'd be more about looking to review your choice of carbohydrate. So in terms of in the last couple of days before the race, is just pick things which are less fibrous than maybe normal. So you start to shift over to your white rice, your white breads, things like that. So you're still getting the same carbohydrate as you would do normally, but without the fiber content, which is then going to basically bung you up. So that'd be maybe the kind of one of the differences there. In terms of, you know, the final days before a race, you know, there's some research looking at choosing, you know, products or carbohydrate products more based around rice than based on sort of oats and wheats in terms of reducing that gastrointestinal distress if you are racing really hard. That research largely comes from the cycling world and the sort of the tour stages that they're doing there. So they've certainly found that, you know, breakfasts based more on rice seem to be tolerated better than, you know, your traditional porridges and those type of things. But again, it's personal preference. You know, what you should have hopefully done by now is you know what kind of breakfast works well for you prior to your run. You know, you've done other races in the past and you know what breakfasts work well for you there. So that's kind of what you want to be focusing on. Don't try anything new. Don't be, you know, trying anything different.
Octopus sandwich.
people kind of go to races and they eat something completely different beforehand, and then that ends up causing them problems. You know, if in doubt, if you've got a history of sort of gut upset in races, you know, try and self-cater before you race it. You know, if you're staying somewhere, try and organise your own food, take your own food with you, so you know what you're getting and you know that it's going to work for you.
Mm. And I know I've interviewed quite a lot of athletes about their pre-race routines, like the night before, and I know Ricky Lightfoot swears by a glass of red wine. He just finds it relaxes him, and you know, it's not got so much alcohol that you're gonna, you know, be really hungover the next day, but it just takes the edge off and just, yep, you know, it's kind of healthy, isn't it, red wine? But I know that Vassos Alexander, you know, the Virgin, yep, Radio sports presenter, he makes it a thing to go abroad and do these races with his cousin, and they always order something that they don't understand off the menu or that they have never tried before, like, and they end up eating, yeah, like squid and octopus, yeah, the night before, a huge meal, yeah. And as yet it has not affected him, so but yeah. I wouldn't really recommend that.
A cast iron stomach.
Yeah, I think he has got a cast iron stomach. It doesn't work for everybody.
No. I mean, some people, there's also this, you know, it's not necessarily just the physical aspects of what you're eating. Sometimes it's the psychological in terms of routine. Mm-hmm. You know, saying about you know, Ricky and his glass of red wine. I coached a chap for, he was racing for England, and he had to go off and hide in his hotel room. His pre-race ritual was three specific local beers from different breweries that he had to drink in that order before a race, the night before a race. But of course, he didn't want to sit there with the rest of the England team drinking these three beers.
He had to hide.
It did good. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, people get their own little kind of rituals.
Yeah, little rituals. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose the final bit, well, actually, I think you should start doing this at least a week before, just in case you haven't got anything. But I've printed out the mandatory, yes, kit list for the UTS, the Ultra Trail Snowdonia, because it's quite complicated in that they put all of the races along the top there. So you've got a tick box so that they can just write down everything here, and then you've got a tick box. So you have to make sure that you're in the right column for your race. Yes. So I am going to be doing a packing film later this afternoon, and hopefully that will go out on Monday with everything that I'm packing. But I just sort of wanted to talk through, like, yes, not only do you need the mandatory kit, but I just feel like you have to have a sense of personal responsibility, especially if the race is somewhere mountainous. Like, for example, they don't say that you need waterproof trousers on the 50k race. And I just think that should be mandatory, and so therefore I will be taking my waterproof trousers. So yeah, just because it's not on the kit list doesn't mean, oh yeah, I'll get away with not taking it. You need to feel safe in yourself, don't you?
Yeah, you know, we're going into the mountains and the weather can change unexpectedly. So, you know, you need to look at the Mountain Weather Information Service and get a very detailed weather forecast. There's a lot of good information out there. You know, Adventure Smart, for example, you know, the mountain rescue teams are regularly posting that up. So making sure you are familiar with how to look after yourself in the mountains. So, you know, if you are picking events, you know, like Ultra Trail Snowdonia or other mountain type events, and maybe you're not overly familiar with being in the mountains, maybe you're coming more from the road or just a low level trail background, and you need to develop your mountain craft, then yeah, certainly you need to be, you know, reviewing the kit list and really think about the, essentially the worst scenario, you know, what could go wrong. And when it comes to your kit, is, you know, can you look after yourself? Yes, you're doing a race. Yes, it's an organized event. But if something goes wrong when you're up in the mountains, there's still going to be a long wait for help to arrive. You know, if you go and sprain your ankle really badly, or, you know, break your ankle even, and you can't move, you're going to get cold very, very quickly, even in good weather. So, you know, we're racing in a couple of weeks, it's May. The weather could be anything in May. We could have a heat wave, or it could be snowing. It could be both. So,
in the same day, in within hours, yeah. Top of the mountain, bottom of the mountain, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got to be prepared. And, you know, if something goes wrong, you could be waiting an hour or more for help to arrive. So you've got to be able to look after yourself. So, you know, they say about taking a, you know, foil blanket or bivy bag. I mean, a foil blanket is useless.
Yeah, I said that to the organiser, and he said it's because it's part of the UTMB, and he said, yeah, he would always take a bag. Yeah, because you can't just hold a blanket around you, and then you don't have any, you know, you can't do your phone or whatever. You need to get inside a bag.
Yeah, and again, I mean, we saw this, it wasn't last year, was it? Was it the year before? The Chinese event where
people died.
Because you've got to have the kit to look after yourself, you know, if the weather suddenly turns and comes in. So I would always say you take a bivy bag. I mean, I've been in situations where I've had to get in my bivy bag, and you very quickly warm back up again. Whereas a blanket would have been utterly
useless. Unless you've gaffer taped it into a bag, it's not useful.
You're not to do that.
I would always pack as if it wasn't a race, like pack as if, like, maybe not the food aspect and the water, because you're going to be hitting those checkpoints, hopefully, and that's not necessarily life or death to have water in Britain where there are streams, but just pack as if you're not on the race, with an err on the side of caution, even if it's a bit heavier.
So, you know, there's a line between carrying so much kit that it actually becomes a problem. So, you know, I fully envisage standing on that start line looking at some people's packs and thinking they're going hiking for a week.
That'll be me.
And I know they're going to look at me going, you haven't got all the mandatory kit in there, but trust me, I will do. You know, I've done this long enough that I know what I need to take and what I don't need to take. And the more you do this, the more you realise you don't need as much as you think you do. However, you've got to think about what the weather conditions are like. So, you know, I've got essentially plan A and plan B, depending on, you know, is it standard weather or is it going to be either the hot or the cold weather kit?
Yeah.
And, you know, if it is going to be very bad weather, it's worth sticking that extra jacket in there, whether it's taking your down jacket, whether it's taking an extra mid layer, taking an extra waterproof even, and, you know, you double waterproof to stay warm. So, I mean, I'll be doing that anyway. I'll be taking a windproof and a waterproof.
Yeah, that's really handy. A windproof is so light, but you get so much warmth from it, and then you can just use that as like a mid layer and put your waterproof over the top.
Exactly. My windproof is technically it's waterproof, but it won't pass check. So my waterproof is there for if it really is horrendous, and then the waterproof goes on. But otherwise, I'll be just using my So improved. Well, it's advertised as water cooled, but it's not real. So, but yeah, it's, you know, go through your kit list, see, you know, see what you're carrying. And we talked a bit about this before when we were chatting about the spine race. And think, so again, you know, look back at, you know, our chats about kit for the spine race. In terms of, you know, are you taking your lightest item of clothing, or are you taking something that's maybe a bit heavier that you don't need? You know, look at layering. Is it better to take maybe two items of clothing rather than one big, heavier item of clothing? Again, have plan A and plan B. You know, you've got your lightweight waterproof, your running waterproof, if the weather is, you know, standard in Snowdonia. But if we end up like with weather that they had last year, where, you know, it was bad, are you better taking your heavier mountain waterproof jacket, you know, maybe more of a hiking type jacket, because that is going to keep you warm, and if you're warm, you're going to keep moving.
Yeah, definitely. So you need to sort of, if you're traveling the day before the race, you need to sort of have them all in your bag, and then that night before, have a look at the weather and just pack accordingly, like make some adjustments.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be going down to Lamberis with sort of three, or if not even four, different options of what kit I'll be wearing on the day, what kit I'll be taking, and you make that decision, because you can look at the weather forecast, you know, people are doing it now. If you look at the Facebook group for races, people are looking at the weather forecast. There's no point looking at it. It's going to change.
There's no point looking just now.
It'll be changing 24 hours out from the race. So you really want to be looking at the Mountain Weather Information Service, you know, 24 hours out from the race, and that'll give you a reasonable idea of what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But it can be different.
And even then, it might still be completely different. I need to look at your films for the shoe choice as well. I need to look at a few actual race films for the shoe choice, because I'm just not sure how grippy to go. I'm not sure if it's mainly on, I don't know what the path situation is like. You can't tell from the map. So I've either got my Salomon Sense rides, which are like 4 mil kind of traily, or I could go for like Innovate X Talon, Cross Talon Ultras, which don't fit me as well. But I could go for them with a more aggressive grip.
It's a tricky one, actually. So I think it really depends on how much rain we get in the next couple of weeks. So I was pretty convinced I was using my spin soft terrain, so Scarpa spin soft terrain, which have got really big 7 mil lugs.
Wow.
Because some of the earlier recces I was doing, the soft ground, the boggy sections were really soft and boggy. And I was thinking, right, I really want this level of grip. The last couple of recces I've done, it's dried right up. And actually, I was then something, oh, maybe I'm going to use a pair of the new Spin Planets, which have just got 4 mil lugs on them.
Yes, it's a Scarpa shoe.
Yeah. So I'm sponsored by Scarpa. So, again, I think we've just got to see. I'll be going down with several pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
I'll be making that decision on for race day as to what the weather has been like over the previous few days. The main thing is you've got to be wearing a pair of shoes that you know are comfortable.
Yeah.
In terms of the 50k, you know, you've got obviously going up Lamberis Path, you could do that in road shoes.
That's my problem. I looked at the route and I'm like, I'm going up Snowdon via the Watkin Path, and I'm like, well, and then down it via the pig track, like the lower pig track.
And yeah, so like, you go up Lamberis, down the pig track.
Yeah, and all that, I could do that in trainers. Or flip flops, actually. Not really.
Yeah, see people do it. So, you know, you would do that in normal trail shoes. That's absolutely fine.
Mm.
But it's the bit after that. So once you come down off Snowdon for the second time, it's all grass underfoot, largely grass underfoot. And there's some sort of boggier sections. So if it has been raining a lot over the last couple of weeks, you might be grateful of the extra tread. So that's where, you know, your Innovates might come in. But if it doesn't, you know, I was up there, not last week, the week before, and the ground was pretty smooth. You know, you didn't need much in the way of tread at all. So it really depends on what the weather's been doing.
Yeah, it really does depend, doesn't it? I'm going to take a few pairs down there. I just have this perennial problem that, no, I haven't found a comfy shoe yet that will do me without giving me blisters in some form. So that's really annoying. But I'll take my K-tape and patch myself up.
So it's looking at your sock choice. It's looking at your insole, looking at the shoe itself. Yes, using the tape. So taping any hot spots in advance. Do you need to be using, lubricant of some description? Common ones are things like sort of Gurney Goo or Siddharth's do their foot creams and things like that. So there's different options out there. But again, you want to be trying this in training to know what works for you.
Yeah, it's the trouble is, trying it in training, I can manage, 3 hours, six, even 6 hours, I can manage that and, then recover from whatever blisters it took that were sort of forming. But I know there's a 14-hour cutoff for this and I may well be using all 14 of those hours. So it's like double what I'm used to. So I just, I don't know whether, if there's a drop bag point, I don't know whether to put a different pair of shoes in there just in case.
I'm not sure if there's a drop bag for the 50k.
I don't think that there is. But yeah, I'm just really torn. I spent the whole of last year testing shoes in the hope of finding the perfect shoe, and I still haven't found the perfect shoe. So I think I'm going to have to just make the perfect shoe out of a hybrid of something cobbled together. Because I love the ultra wide stuff, but the grip just wears down immediately. It's not got a good aggressive sole at all. So even if I put an insole in that to not make them zero drop, then I've still got that problem. So I've just been sent a pair of Salomon Sense Rides and they're actually really comfy. It's the first time that I've found a Salomon shoe wide enough to fit my my feet. And I've just slipped on the cross talons and I can all Innovate shoes sort of push my toes in too early. And it's just really annoying. So I'm just not sure if I can go for those ones.
Well, the Innovate Last just isn't right for your foot shape.
No, it's not anymore. It used to be. It used to be great. Yeah, it's...
If you found the Salomon... if that works for you, then great.
I'm really surprised. So, it's the first time a Salomon shoe's actually worked, but then I've only worn them for 5 miles so far, so that's another reason to go out on Friday and run up and down some hills just to check that these shoes are going to be okay for 14 hours, which they may well not be.
Think about, if you were to start getting blisters, where do you normally get them and what do you do about it? So think about, do you put a plaster on, where would you tape? And you do that before the race starts.
That's what I need to find out on Friday, because so far they've been fine, but I just feel like it might start just here under the ankle. So I'll see where I need to put it. I might also draw the GP on my arm. I'm thinking about that. I don't know if that will be a good idea if I'm wearing a t-shirt. And I thought I might write all the cutoffs down on the GP, not on my arm, but maybe on a piece of paper. Write all the cutoffs down according to the GP, and then write down what, then have a think about what food I might need when. So that I sort of pack it into sort of little, in little plastic bags. I might need this for this hour, this for the next hour, this for up this hill, or, put it in four different little bags, maybe. I don't know whether that would be a good
plan. That's what I generally do. I'll have little flashcards. So for a sort of big race, I'll have laminated flashcards.
Done them already?
Not for Snowdonia yet, no. But if you can probably put a link to, I'll send you a link onto my blog for kind of. Sorry, get my words out there. I mean, it's lunchtime. A link to kind of a blog that I did on. Preparing for a race, and if you particularly can't get there, is all the different things you can do. But certainly one of the things is you can produce some flashcards, so some reminders about what you need to be thinking about at certain sections, just chunking the race into different sections, chunking it, which is a good sports psychology technique as well, just chunking the race up. So you're only focusing on that one flashcard in front of you for the next maybe couple of hours, or the next few miles, or whatever it might be. And yes, writing down on that, what my nutrition should be for this section. So, I know that between the start and for me going to Penny Pass, I need to be drinking this, I need to be thinking about that. I'm expecting to hit the top of, not quite the top of Snowdon, the finger post at this time. I'm expecting to then get down to Penny Pass at this time. I need to refill with this product, and then heading up on the next climb, I'm going to be doing it. So it's all kind of written out.
Yeah.
All my little brain needs to think about in the moment is that short section in front of me.
Yeah.
I don't need to worry about the long, long miles ahead.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the next few miles. And then it's kind of get rid of that flashcard, move on to the next one. This is what I'm thinking about now.
Yeah. I find that kind of stuff quite fun to do. Like, I, you know, like when you go traveling, I like putting my shampoo in all the tiny bottles. You know, like you get tiny bottles for everything and you make everything tiny so that it's less weight. I like all this kind of prep and planning, and I'm really looking forward to this afternoon because I've earmarked this afternoon for packing and making those little flashcards, and then I'm going to film it as a packing video to help other people. So yeah, I'm looking forward to doing this bit. It's quite anal, isn't it? But it really appeals.
Flashcards. I mean, Josie Perry, the sports psychologist. Have a look at her website. She's got a lot of really good free resources there, on her social media as well. She does a lot around sort of things like preparing for marathons. But you know, get your gels that you're going to be using at different sections. Stick some tape on it and write yourself some notes.
Oh yeah.
Or she gets other people. She gets her daughter to write notes on her gels. When she pulls out her gel, she's then got something there to kind of give her a bit of meaning for this next section, and a bit of extra motivation in there. So you can do things like that as well.
Yeah.
So, whether I'll be doing flashcards for UTS, probably not. Actually, probably what I'm going to do is actually just write on my gel. So I basically pick that up and say, right, this gel is for the next hour. In the next hour, I'm climbing this. I've got, you know, this elevation to do. I'm looking for these particular landmarks. It might be a case of, I know, right, if I need to pick up some extra water, there's a stream in here. Or if it is really hot, there's going to be a stream here. I can splash water on my arms and cool down. Might be little reminders of things from the recces that will just kind of, again, just help me stay focused in the moment of what I'm looking for. You know, things like, right, there's this scramble section coming up. You know, remember to put your poles away before you're scrambling up this tricky rock climb, those type of things. There were actually rock climbs on the 50. There were.
That's a shame. I like that. So you're doing the 100K. How long do you expect that to take you? And for that reason, will you be like putting a bit of salty food in? Trail Running Phil's just asking, will you use like salty actual food, or will you use salt tablets and sticks?
Yeah, so again, I've got a relationship with Precision Hydration, well, Precision Fuel and Hydration, as they are now. So I'll be using pH and Fuel, whatever they're calling themselves now. I still just call them pH, Precision Hydration. So yeah, I'll be using their salts, their electrolytes. So I use their 1,000 milligrams in my water. So I'll be carrying sachets of that to add into my water, so I give my electrolytes there.
And how long do you reckon that the 100K, how long do you plan for it to take if everything goes to plan?
Depends what the that's a really tricky one, actually. So I know if the weather is good, based on all my recces, I know what I'm potentially capable of. But it all depends on the weather. I could just go straight out the window.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you'd complete it before I complete mine. Of half.
That's my plan.
14 hours.
It's getting close to that.
Yeah. So you might be going twice as fast as me, like a proper elite athlete.
It could be close to that, yeah. I mean, they're expecting the fastest runners to be doing it in about 13 hours.
Wow.
I'm not going to be that fast. But I would hope to be somewhere up there.
Yeah.
It depends on what the weather's doing.
Yeah. So you'll be finishing, if you're starting at 5 a.m, you'll be finishing like in the before it gets dark, will you, with that?
Yeah, that's the point. So
yeah, that's so finished before it gets dark.
The hope is my head torch won't come out the bag.
Yes, yeah, your two head torches plus spare batteries. Well, I'll probably be coming in at 2 a.m. because I don't think I'll start till 8, and we've got 14 hours for it, so I haven't calculated when that will be, but probably be at the small hours of the morning or something like that.
I'll see you on the finish line.
Yeah, you can come back out and cheer.
It could all go horribly wrong and we'll be coming in together.
So. Yeah, I'd love to swoop you up on the way and go, come on, Tim, run this last bit. Nearly there.
Yeah. You can dry my tears.
We've just got Maria on the live chat. She says she always tapes her feet the day before a long hike or Eskimo day, and that's so that the tape has plenty of time to adhere, and it can stay on for days. If you cut off the corners as well, cut off the corners.
Yeah, using K tape, it can stay on for 3 to 5 days. It's not a problem. Yeah,
because then you don't have. Yeah, then you're not sort of trying to faff around with it on the hillside. I think I might be trying to faff around on the hillside because I don't really know where my shoes are going to rub me. But anyway, it's all training for the Lakeland 50 anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
But thank you, Tim. It's been really good to chat to you today. I think lots of people have had some great answers to their questions.
Yep.
And I just wish you all the best in your final preparation as well for the ETF.
I'll see you down
100.
There. You're down Friday?
Yes, yeah. I'll be down there on Friday. Yep. And I'll be staying over Friday night and Saturday night as well. So I'll be there. I'll be there as early as possible on Friday, hopefully by lunchtime. So I'll drop you a text when I'm there, a message, and we might be able to meet up.
I'll be down there as well.
I know quite a few of my patrons are doing it as well. We've got Christian Poulton, I think he's watching as well now. Sean O'Keefe's doing it. Andrew Knox is doing it. My friend Rosemary Bide, who I know from Adventure Racing back in the day.
Yes, I know Rosemary.
Yeah, and Caroline Karen, who is my Isle of Man friend. So I'm going to hopefully message everyone for a bit of a team photo before we start. Then they can all go off and I'll just be hiking behind at the back.
Yeah, all good.
Cool. Everyone says good luck. Oh, today she wants to know about sun cream brands. P20 is great, I think. It's the best sports one.
And again, you can put that on, the night before and just let it all soak in.
It bonds to your skin.
Taping and things like that, so just kind of get the sun cream on. So they say, P20 is a good one. If you are doing a longer one in your drop bag, it might be worth carrying having a small small tube of sun cream. So I've got I generally put a small tube in which has got the sort of lip salve, so it's like sun cream, lip salve, and a small bit of sun cream in there. So if you need to, then just stick a bit extra on, on your nose, on your cheeks, ears, things like that.
Sean's recommended Peloton as well for running and triathlon because it's waterproof and it doesn't come off with sweat. But I find P20 is brilliant. I used it in Costa Rica and I didn't have to reapply all day, and I'm ginger, so that is a great advert for P20. I'm going to go and get some from the shop today. Hannah Bassey says good luck, hope you're recovering well from your PB 270, Hannah. And Tadeusz says thanks for great advice as well. So follow Tim on Instagram, Tim HP3 coaching. Book him for coaching, he's a great coach, as you can see. He's been really kind today and giving us so much amazing advice. We chatted to Tim fairly recently, so if your question hasn't been answered today, just sign up on Patreon and you can ask Tim a question in future. Thank you very much, Tim, and I'll see you in a few days time.
Not this weekend coming, the one after.
See you next Friday, not this Friday but next.
Exciting times.
Yeah, it's all exciting,
right. See you soon, take care.
Cool. Bye Tim, see you soon.